Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, or whenever you happen to be listening to this. Welcome to the Film Realist Podcast, the film and TV podcast from a complete nobody. That is hopefully for somebody. My name is Kyle Naranya, and welcome to episode 191, where on this week's episode of the podcast, I am going to be reviewing Scream 7. As this is a feature film review, there will be a non-spoiler section, as well as a spoiler section within the review of the film. So if you want to see a time code, no need to worry. They are listed in the episode description. And then to end the episode, I will be responding to listener mail and question of the week responses. Let's avoid getting killed by a childhood horror, I suppose.
This is it.
Can't believe we're staying at the Psycho Killer B&B.
Oh, that's so cool. It's a motion detector.
Before getting started with the review, I understand that there's going to be a portion of the theatrical going public that chooses to not see this film because of what happened in the last couple years that led to the film that we now have, Melissa Barrera being fired, other stars choosing to leave, the directors and the writers choosing to not be a part of the project, and a complete shakeup that led to Kevin Williamson coming back and a whole different movie being made, a huge payday for Neve Campbell, and now we have this version of Scream 7, which was obviously not the version that we likely would have gotten if those stars were still attached. If you chose to not see the movie because of what happened, I totally respect that. If you still wanted to go and see it because this is one of your favorite franchises, I understand that as well. With that context being given, I'm judging the movie completely on the movie we got. The irony is this is a complete creative shakeup, and we now have a third film in this new trilogy that has nothing to do with the two previous installments. So I wanted to address what has been abundantly clear to a lot of people going into this film, particularly in the opening weekend. But Scream 7, here's the review. Let's get right to it. This movie's a mess. What's really frustrating, purely on Scream 7's own standing, is there is an attempt in this movie to reboot the franchise within itself again. What has been the best part of the Scream franchise, now I am not a diehard fan, I have seen all of them, as longtime listeners will know, horror is not a genre I typically go to. It would be impossible to avoid the impact of the Scream franchise, as well as what has come after that, such as the Scary Movies, and ironically, there was a trailer for Scary Movie 6 that led into Scream 7. But this movie just feels like such a whiplash reaction from Scream 6, which of course focused on our new main characters and did not include Neve Campbell. She was written out of that film because of a pay dispute. She is now back because they needed a new lead. And the film does desperately to try to recapture the magic of 5 in a way, which I found incredibly frustrating because you were building out this new modern interpretation of the Scream franchise, a horror franchise that in itself has had its own meta commentary on franchise brands, as well as the horror genre. It is one of the touchstones of the first film that was retrospectively so ahead of its time that it's kind of insane that Wes Craven and Kevin Williamson were able to do that 30 years ago, almost to the day. And with Scream 7, this movie's exploration of the legacy of Sidney Prescott and everything around it, what was being built up that has had to be completely creatively sidestepped to do something else, is you get the bare bones elements of a Scream film that so desperately wants to be as compelling as 5 and 6, And while I don't necessarily love every installment in this franchise, there was a real revitalization, it is a reboot, a requel. It's addressed in the earlier films, but a reboot in a way that's similar, ironically, to something like Star Wars, where you are pivoting towards a new starring ensemble and you have your legacy characters be a part of the narrative and you feel that history throughout the franchise and their meaningful connections to characters from the past has been a wealth of interesting story. And you don't get any of that in this movie. It is public that Matthew Lillard is back. And I will absolutely not spoil how he is in the movie, but I can say that it is the best example of member berries, nostalgia bait. It is a surface level use of that character that could have been really interesting in using that as the barometer for Sidney Prescott, as well as the future of this franchise. But instead, it grabs at the jargon of the day, what is popular now, and would have made sense if they actually took the time to explore what Stu being in this franchise would mean for Sidney, for Gale, and all of the other characters who are newer to this franchise. Mindy Meeks Martin is back. Chad Meeks Martin is back. There really are connections to the two previous films. But overall, this is sort of like Scream 5/4 again, where we're trying to bring back this franchise in a way where could we get sequels from Sidney Prescott and her daughter? Is there a legacy with these new characters? The critical reception to the film has not been good, but with controversy does come money, usually for whatever reason, because this film managed to have the highest box office weekend ever for the franchise, which is especially interesting, but I would suspect that the following week will drop when most word of mouth gets out that this movie's really bad. I watch horror films when they are highly recommended to me or a film that I'm really looking forward to. Of course, I reviewed 28 years later, The Bone Temple, and that's the complete antithesis of what Scream 7 is. There is no meaningful meta commentary on Sidney's legacy, the Scream franchise, the Stab franchise. This is essentially if someone made a Scream movie or a Stab movie within the Scream franchise, that is everything you would expect from people who don't necessarily understand what makes Scream scream. The predictable nature of this slasher flick is comical at times. It is more annoying than anything that you can see what a bad Scream movie would be. And the most frustrating part from that is Kevin Williamson is one of the people that's responsible for this franchise. But the new creative minds that were responsible for 6 and 7 clearly had an understanding on what makes this new version of Scream work with modern sensibilities. Scream 7 feels much more akin to Scream 4 than any other film in the franchise. You're unfortunately stuck with introducing a bunch of new characters again. And while this franchise has managed to do that more than a number of times successfully, which is shocking on its own right, but you are going for the most conventional and I would say boring version of a reboot with Sydney's relationship to her daughter. This has not been a relationship that we have seen significantly in any other film, and this relationship that we are supposed to be disappointed by is one that the film has to tell you. And if you are a longtime fan of films or TV, the rule is always show and don't tell. And the using exposition successfully is not one of the pros of this movie. You give a character the bare bones of a motivation, and it's supposed to be, well, you know, parents just don't understand, a reflection of Sydney being a parent of a high school student. There are interesting concepts that, as bullet points, would easily get this movie greenlit. Obviously, it's Scream 7, Neve Campbell is returning. But overall, it is everything you would expect, and that is one of the most frustrating parts of a franchise that isn't Scream. So many slasher flicks wind up just becoming almost parodies of themselves, and Scream 7, more than any other Scream film, really winds up feeling like that. Its predictable nature with the killing is comical at times. Its predictability is annoying as well, because what was so fun with this newer version of the franchise was really using slasher films in modern cinema with modern sensibilities, that predictable nature that you can spin on its head in a fun way. But everything about this movie's characters, its exploration of Ghostface's legacy, and its impact on pop culture is also boring. There has been so much that has happened around Ghostface, to Ghostface, to Sydney Prescott and her family, as well as Gail and our newer characters, that at times it does sort of feel like characters are just sort of going through the paces. We've done this. We know what to do. But then bad things still happen to us. It thinks it's smarter than it is. And in a Scream movie, that is incredibly disappointing. This is not a version of this franchise that I think at all will be successful moving forward. Unfortunately, Tatum Evans, Isabella May, is just not given anything interesting to create her to be this next Scream queen, similar to what has been a drawing force for Sydney Prescott. The only aspect of the movie that I found remotely interesting was the back and forth between Neve Campbell and Courtney Cox. Having spent one adventure apart, it is interesting to have Gail have experienced something else that Sydney was not a part of. And there are times where you can see moments that should lead to really interesting conversations between the characters, but you sort of just wind up getting the bare minimum, and that's supposed to be good enough. I understand that this film was completely shifted from what it was supposed to be. I get that, but maybe you should have pushed it for longer. It's pretty out there that there was obviously a complete rewrite of this story, but it still winds up being Scream 5 again, and not nearly as good as Scream 5 or Scream 6. I don't foresee this franchise getting better. If anything, I think it's potentially going to get worse. And what's really frustrating is Matthew Lillard's return has been something that people have wanted since he let it out that originally he was going to be in Scream 3. And the use of that character was so disappointing to me that if they manage to bring him back again, I hope it is in a much more meaningful way, because that character deserves so much more. And we've seen from Scream 5 and Scream 6 that the use of Skeet Ulrich's Billy Loomis was so much better in its significance to the franchise and to those two previous films that I'm really bummed out, because I didn't have high hopes for this, but my expectations were that I would enjoy it, and I did not at all. This movie kind of sucks. That will do it for non-spoilers. There is a lot, as this is a slasher film, to get into in spoilers. So please, don't leave. Let's get into Scream 7 spoilers, and I can tell you why it's worse than maybe you even think.
Where'd you find that jacket?
The attic. I was looking through some old clothes.
You could have asked.
So as you've seen in the trailer, we see that the, I believe, I always want to say mocker house is being used as a stab slash obviously scream Sidney Prescott experience as an Airbnb, resulting in the deaths of two young adults. And this is supposed to be the exciting incident to the cold open, as you would describe it. And it's such an annoying aspect of the movie, which is we immediately need to establish where Sydney's been. She has this family that now I am sure that there are people who are going to understand the entire timeline of who she is, who her kids are. We know bits and pieces based on her appearance in Scream 5. I am not a historian of this franchise. I don't pretend to be. So if I misremember something, I apologize. I wanted to have time to rewatch all of them leading into Scream 7. I didn't have the chance. We know she had the kids, but in Scream 5, she is much more a supporting character than the lead. In Scream 7, we have to reestablish Sydney Prescott as the lead. We get to see her with her daughter. Her relationship is not one that is necessarily successful or even healthy because, of course, Neve Campbell is incredibly guarded given the experiences that she has had. Seems slightly counterintuitive given to how her life ended at the end of Scream 5, but whatever, we've got to establish tension. And the tension she has with her daughter, Tatum, named of course after Tatum Riley from the very first film, and Ghostface calls and requests a video call, and it is Stu, scarred up from having the TV, of course, dropped on his face in the initial film. Now, here's what I would have thought would have been really interesting. Obviously, it is a trope of the Scream franchise to throw you into a loop, have a red herring for who Ghostface could actually be. There's usually multiple ones. While, obviously, there is more to the Stu appearance, and I will get to it, it would have been way more interesting if Stu was in fact actually alive and just the villain we knew tailing Sydney, and you could have used the fact that Stu was actually alive as a representative for the legacy of this franchise, how he has survived, how he is around, as opposed to what it actually is, which is a guy who worked at a psych ward, used deepfakes to pretend to be different characters from Sydney's past. And I have to say, I am not a diehard fan of this franchise, but my God, this felt so cheap. Skeet Ulrich's visions that were being seen by Michelle Barrera in the previous films, or sorry, Melissa Barrera, been a very long day, were really compelling because that image of him as a teenager and her relationship to who she thinks she is and her connections to her biological father were a driving force of 5 and 6. And Stu is the other main antagonist, obviously, from the first film. And for him just to be used as deepfake footage now, I will give the film credit that there still is the potential that Stu is actually alive, because we do know that the examination of his body, those records from the police are missing from the forensic pathologists. They're gone. So there is the possibility that Matthew Lillard's Stu does actually show up in the future. But in having Matthew Lillard do press for this, not being able to talk about it, and only to be used to drive Sydney mad, the reveal that he is not actually back is incredibly underwhelming, specifically because the actual reveal as who the actual Ghostface are bad. Anna Camp, as Lucas's mother, who is one of the new characters, who's somebody who is obsessed about with real, or not real crime, true crime, is played by Asa Germain, who is, of course, Sam in Gen V and The Boys. And he does a good job just being Sam from Gen V and The Boys. This movie has so many things it's trying to do, which is you're trying to create a new crew of people with Sydney's own daughter and her boyfriend, and the exploration of the legacy of Sydney not trusting boyfriends after the experience that she had. What does that mean for Tatum's actual boyfriend, who turns out isn't actually a bad guy, when there was a moment of mistrust where it looks like he was in fact creating the deepfakes, but it was actually a test to see if he could create a deepfake of Stu, having had him aged up and whatnot. But Anna Kemp just being this mom whose breaking point was reading Sydney's book, and that turned her into a killer. She, of course, is around at times, but for this to be a film that is exploring the legacy of Sydney Prescott's life, maybe more so than any of the other ones, for the main villains to just be two completely brand new people is incredibly underwhelming. Five was really doing a reboot in redoing the original film. Six was a direct connection to that and the aftermath of Five, where if you had actually had this be the return of a character, and I understand, and this is the irony of this while saying it, Scream has not brought characters who have canonically died truly back on screen. I guess technically we had the return of Hayden Panettiere from Scream 4, but I honestly can't remember Scream 4. They all sort of blur together. I don't believe she actually was pronounced dead on screen. Now, if you, and again, this is why it works so effectively within the Scream franchise, if you actually potentially inferred that Stu was never dead and really came back and was offended that his legacy was a bunch of these hacks pretending to be me, how dare they attempt to be me? Billy and I are the reason this exists, and systematically ruining things in Sydney's life, in Gail's life, in Tatum's life, that's way more intimidating, especially if the film just tells you. If it is much more a cat and mouse story than just another twist, you would be in fact playing with what Scream is, which is a commentary on franchise sequels, on doing the same thing over, and it would have been especially funny given how one of the most recent sequel trilogies had Palpatine return for absolutely no reason. That is why Matthew Lillard is in this film, to use as marketing material. And when people who have been waiting for this for so long see that he's a deepfake, as well as other deepfakes, that, ooh, you see them on the screen. All these people are dead. We've seen them get bullets shot through their head, outside of Stu, of course, because he was crushed by a TV, which we did see in Scream 6, and you see a reference to it in the Airbnb. But in this movie, he's just there to be like, hey, look, he's there. It would have been interesting if you played with the idea that of something that was said by Matthew Lillard that was originally going to be done for Scream 3, which was that he was responsible for the ghost faces that were out there. If this felt like, and it's weird being the seventh film, that you were introducing this overarching story that could be connected to Matthew Lillard's Stu, that would have been interesting. Disciples of the original Ghostface killer. But instead you get a guy who had mental illness is the first Ghostface, and then you get a guy who worked there and was one of his doctors, and then a really angry soccer mom. In the pantheon of ghost-faced killers, is this the worst? Oh, on top of that, yeah, and David Arquette comes back as a Dewey deepfake. We see a bunch of all the past killers all together, and that's supposed to be really, really cool and excite people. Kevin Williamson has been a part of this franchise for 30 years, involved in some regard for part of it, and this is what we got for Scream 7, and I'm really disappointed. I don't know if you can tell from everything I've had to say about it. I don't know if we're going to get Scream 8. I don't think some of these characters should move forward. I think you introduced some, and then you killed them. McKenna Grace getting offed was not something I thought that was going to happen. But you introduce a lot of things that are very reminiscent of the first one and feel completely redundant based on 5. And that's really frustrating. I am a casual Scream fan, but the fact that I'm disappointed, I can only imagine what diehard Scream fans think of this, because if I feel this way, I feel bad for them. And that is one of the worst ways to feel about a beloved franchise. I don't have to be a diehard fan to appreciate that there are diehard fans of this, but this is not it. Scream fans, you deserve better, and so did I. That will do it for my spoiler thoughts. Don't see this. Rewatch Scream 5, rewatch Scream 6, and if you chose to not see this, you're probably better off for that. Now, let's get to listener mail and question of the week responses.
Can I ask you a question?
Just one?
There's something I really need to ask you.
I ask the questions, you answer the questions.
Why do you ask questions to which you already know the answers?
Did that count as a question?
Yes.
Damn it.
Last week's question of the week was, what is your favorite horror movie reboot? Of course, Scotty Cameron responded. Let's hear what he had to say. Best horror movie reboot. Silence of the Lambs. I know it's a cerebral horror, so it's not typically what we think of when we think of horror. That's a visceral horror. Still, horror is horror. Silence of the Lambs went on to be a box office success and an Academy Award-winning film after Manhunter bombed. It was a brilliant choice to adapt the second book for the franchise instead of just starting over with a Red Dragon readaptation. For a visceral horror movie, I think I would have to say Candyman 2021, or as a requel. Scotty, I love that answer, and it's probably one a lot of people aren't thinking about, so I really appreciate you letting me know. Dylan Pollock writes in, I feel like I always hop on to the toot of Evil Dead, but both Evil Dead Rise and Evil Dead 2013 are so different than what came before, and I think it's really great example of maintaining what people know while still giving them something entirely different from what they expect and managing to be satisfying. Those are both really good examples. I know both of you really do like horror films, so it's funny that we had completely different things. I do love the Candyman from 2021. Scream is, I think, another good example, and while it definitely teetered off, are the modern Halloween films a good example of that as well? If you didn't answer last week's question of the week, let me know. Also, what did you think of Scream 7? I will read the comments. You can answer directly on YouTube or Spotify. I will see them. But that leads me to this week's question of the week. Next week, I'm going to be reviewing The Bride, written and directed by Maggie Gyllenhaal, and that's inspired this. What is your favorite Universal monster? If you want to go even further, what's your favorite interpretation of the Universal monsters? So that is Dracula, Frankenstein, the monster from the Black Lagoon, you know, classic monsters that I don't think enough people will talk about. The Mummy, the Wolfman. Let me know in the comments. You can email me as well, filmrealistpod@gmail.com, or include the hashtag QOTW. The podcast is doing well on all the platforms. Thank you so much to our... I was going to say amazing and phenomenal. So what is that? Famazing? Phenomenal? Ammonimal? I don't know. Let's come up with a hybrid of those two words. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, please make sure to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform. Leave a 5-star review or subscribe on YouTube. Whatever way you choose to consume podcasts, it helps the algorithm. Write a comment. Let's get into those threads. Let's get into those tweets. Have more people hear this show from a Canadian who loves film and TV. Thank you so much for listening to the show. As I've said, next week's episode is going to be a review of The Bride. I can't wait to watch that. My name is Kyle Naranja, and I will see you next time.